Time now for the Border News Roundup with Marshall Helmberger. Marshall edits the Timber Jay, a weekly newspaper serving communities in northern St. Louis County. Good morning, Marshall.
Well, good morning, Scott.
Well, Marshall, let's lead off with some breaking news, some business news about Polymet Mining Project and new business owner there. What's going on?
Yeah, well, Polymet announced on Thursday that Glencore, which is that Swiss-based commodities broker, it's a massive company owned by several of the world's richest individuals, that they have taken over majority ownership of the Polymet project. In fact, according to the press release, Glencore now owns about 72% of the company's outstanding stock. That's going to change a number of things, probably for that project. For one thing, it means that the project will undoubtedly have the financial backing of Glencore, which, you know, they generate annual revenues in excess of $200 billion a year. So the price tag to bring this mine under construction and open certainly is a relatively minor one for a company with the assets of Glencore. So I think the financial stuff really is kind of cleared away by this. But there's certainly going to be other concerns. The political ramifications are probably going to be an issue as well. Glencore is really a notorious company founded by Mark Rich, who was that fugitive financier who Bill Clinton famously or infamously pardoned, one of his last acts as president. And the company has a reputation around the world for, you know, environmental problems as well as union busting, things like that. I know a lot of unions have had nothing good to say about Glencore around the world. There are probably going to be some ramifications on the political side. There's also questions then, too, about whether or not Glencore would be added to the permits for this project. To date, Polymet is the only company that's named in these permits. And I know there's a push, there's been a push for a while by some of the environmental groups that have been saying, well, Glencore should be added to these permits so they're responsible for cleanup, because obviously, you know, a company like Polymet doesn't really have many assets on its own. It was always just the backing by Glencore that made this whole thing, you know, possible. So there's going to be definitely some fallout from this, both good and bad, probably, for the prospects of the mine. And so we'll have to see how that plays out.
Well, the prospects for the mine are still in question. There's still fallout from the recent revelation that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency withheld comments from the Federal Environmental Protection Agency over Polymet's water permit. And so that discharge permit, is, would you say it's still up in the air?
It's still in existence right now, and it has not been suspended at this point, although there is likely to be a motion, I believe, in court soon that will be calling on Minnesota courts to suspend that or stay that permit until a number of issues are resolved, including a legal challenge of the water discharge permit. Actually, the folks behind that lawsuit, which includes Water Legacy and the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, as well as the Fond du Lac Band, they won a victory this week. They had asked the Minnesota Court of Appeals to send their case to a district court because of the irregularities that they're alleging in the administrative record. And, of course, what they're talking about are comments that the professional staff at the EPA had generated raising questions and concerns about the water discharge permit that the MPCA was going to issue. The EPA professional staff had indicated that they felt that the permit that the MPCA was planning to issue likely did not comply with the Clean Water Act. However, it's been alleged, and there's actually documentation now, that top officials within the MPCA had asked the folks at the EPA not to submit those written comments expressing those concerns during the public comment period. That's highly unusual, and it's been questioned by EPA staff and whistleblowers within that agency, which have started talking about this. The groups that are suing, they've asked to have this brought back to the district court so there can be more fact-finding into exactly what the MPCA did do in trying to keep concerns concerns from the EPA out of the administrative record. One of the things you have to keep in mind is when an agency makes a decision, if a group appeals that decision, it goes straight to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals can only make a ruling based on what's known as the administrative record. And that would be, you know, documents that the agency used in order to make its decision. But in this case, the groups allege that because it appears that there were efforts made to taint the administrative record by leaving important information and documents out of the record, they needed this to go back to district court, which can undertake fact-finding. And then if it turns out that some of these additional documents and records should be included in the administrative record, then the district court could, you know, order that, and then that would expand the administrative record, which the Court of Appeals could then use in order to make its decision.
I can't help but wonder what kind of pressures within the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency there might have been that would make them want to suppress those comments.
Well, I think there's a tremendous amount of political pressure, obviously, you know, probably from the governor's office on down to try to get this project approved. And I think they were also clearly, I mean, they knew that some of these permits were likely to be challenged in court, and they wanted to bolster their case by keeping, you know, potentially damaging information out of the record. And I think in the end, it's really blown up, I think, in the MPCA's face here. I mean, this is really turned into a major issue. It's gotten a lot of attention, not just in our paper, but, you know, papers around the state now. Also this week, there's going to be more investigation, not just by the courts. The Minnesota Legislative Auditor will be doing a review of exactly what kind of action the MPCA did take to try to withhold some of these comments from the record. And also there's a federal investigation, which was announced last week by the Office of Inspector General at the EPA, and they're also going to be looking into the federal agency's role in keeping these comments out of the administrative record. So there's going to be a lot of scrutiny over what took place here, and in the end, if the courts find that there were improprieties, or if some of these other federal investigations or state investigations find that, there may be pressure then to throw this existing water discharge permit out. Certainly the court would have the ability to do that, and in which case then you'd have to kind of start over, and that could take some time.
All right. Well, it's time to move on. Bring us up to date on what's new in the ongoing controversy surrounding the suspended Tower City Clerk Treasurer. What's new?
Well, of course, as we had talked about last week, the city council had suspended the clerk treasurer, Linda Keith, and that was earlier this month. And now they had a special meeting this week as well, and they had hoped to have some additional information on the city's finances, because that had been one of the big outstanding questions, because there had been so little financial information that had been provided by the clerk treasurer to the council. And so there was concern about the city's financial condition as well as its cash flow, which they know the cash flow has been very, very tight. So they were hoping, the council was hoping to have some answers. They had brought in a couple retired bankers who are living in the community who had offered to come in and try to go through the books and see, you know, what the situation is. And the initial report they gave to the council this week was that it was a big mess. They are still trying to figure out whether any of the numbers that they see are tied to reality. They say there's a lot of discrepancies between what are shown on the city's books versus what's appearing in the bank's statements. So there's some concern there. They're not necessarily suspecting, you know, money's missing. It's more a question of money has just not been tracked. The books have not been kept up to date. One of the big issues, too, is I guess when the auditors came in this winter to audit the city's books, they provided the clerk with a huge stack, I guess dozens and dozens of correcting journal entries that they had wanted her to make to try to get the books in order. And it's not clear that those entries have been made. The folks who are trying to figure it out now just are really struggling because, you know, when you don't have a base, any base number that you can rely on, it's difficult to try to, you know, work back and piece things together. They said there have been a lot of general ledger transactions where money was shifted from one account to another, and they're still trying to trace all those to see, you know, where the money ended up and where it should be. And so it really is a problem. And then, you know, the other issue was, and this was a really bizarre situation, the council had requested that the suspended clerk return a laptop computer that the city had purchased that she had been using, and she said last week that she would not be returning it because she said it doesn't exist anymore. She said it had gone on the fritz, and then she had given it to her son, who took it out in the yard and shot it with a shotgun, and then she ran it over with her pickup truck, and then they burned the remains in a fire, which definitely did not please members of the council. The mayor said it was very disturbing, given that the clerk is the subject of at least two potentially criminal investigations, one involving falsification of records, the other involving possible reading of the mayor's emails. The mayor noted that this laptop computer very well may have had evidence on it. Mm-hmm. So the destruction of this clearly was a concern from that standpoint, as well as the fact that this was public property and she had no right to destroy it the way she claimed she did.
So this story is not even anywhere near resolved, is it?
No, it certainly isn't. This is going to go on for some time.
Yeah, well, we've all felt at one time or another probably wanting to do that to a computer, but most of us are pretty restrained.
That's right, yeah.
Say, let's close with a fun or kind of a curious story. DNR is trying to capture a black bear in the Ely area. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, this is a bear that actually, from all accounts, it's a pretty gentle bear, but it does like to get itself in trouble. It likes to raid bird feeders. It has a regular route, apparently, along several lakes just outside of Ely. During one of its forays, it managed to stick its head. It looks like it stuck its head into a public garbage can that had one of those ones that have kind of a ring at the top. They have like a center that's open where you throw garbage in. And apparently the bear had stuck its head in there to try to get something in the garbage can. And when he came out, he had the lid still attached to his head. So it's like a dog with a cone, you know, and it... what you get from the vet. So the bear has been walking around with this now for about 3 weeks, and it's just driving the DNR wildlife folks here to distraction, because they get many calls a day. I mean, sometimes they're getting a dozen calls a day from members of the public who see this bear with this ring around its lid around its neck, and they're, you know, worried about the bear. So they call the DNR, and of course they're well aware of it. They've been trying for 3 weeks now to capture it in a barrel trap. It has actually been in the barrel trap three times, but it's not a real aggressive bear, and it has not tripped the trigger on this thing. So they're just continuing to try until eventually, just hoping that this bear will set this trap off, and they'll be able to tranquilize it then and get that lid off of its neck. At this point, it doesn't seem like the bear is suffering that much from it. It certainly is going about its business, raiding bird feeders and whatnot, and doesn't appear that it's that tight on the bear, that it's constricting its breathing or anything like that. You know, it looks like the DNR probably has time, but as long as they're dealing with this, they're kind of frustrated. As the area wildlife manager told me, this bear is a real pain in the butt.
Okay. All right, Marshall. Well, we'll catch up on that story and a lot of other ones, I'm sure, in the weeks ahead. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
Marshall Helmberger, he edits the Timber Jay, a weekly newspaper serving communities in northern St. Louis County. And we speak with him Friday mornings on the Border News.